You see evidence of it all around. It's the politicians, it's the 24-hour news often that profit by keeping us divided. But in our hearts, the people of this country want to come together. They know that our kids will do better if we do.
Well, Ben, we're going to do part two of this conversation and post online at democracynow.org. I think I met you years ago on the grounds of the prison in Jackson, Georgia, where Troy Anthony Davis was executed, and you were protesting outside. We're going to talk about mass incarceration, the death penalty, and so many other issues with Ben Jealous, former president of the NAACP, then People for the American Way. Now coming up, we'll head the Sierra Club. Is the grandson of Mamie Todd, who died last year at the age of 105. She was an outspoken civil rights activist who, as a social worker, led to Maryland's Child Protective Service Agency. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. The new book, Never Forget Our People, Always Free.
I'm Naomi Klein, and you are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on KBOO Evening News, Oregon's new governor, Tina Kotek, has big plans for addressing the homelessness crisis. The Portland Thorns get a new head coach and a $1 million fine. And pharmacy chains CVS and Walgreens plan to sell abortion medication over-the-counter with a prescription. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for January 10th, 2023. I'm Eric Kushner. Tina Kotek was sworn in as Oregon's 39th governor on Monday. Today is her first full day in office, and in her inauguration speech, she says she has big plans for the first day. Kotek announced two actions related to homelessness. First, she signed an executive order to establish an ambitious housing production target of 36,000 new homes per year. Compared to recent construction trends, that's an 80% increase. Her second action will be to declare a homelessness state of emergency. A state of emergency declaration means that more state funding can be freed up to take immediate action to address the emergency. Kotek said in her speech, quote, "Our state's response must meet the urgency of the humanitarian crisis we're facing." Kotek proposes investing $130 million to help another 1,200 Oregonians move off the streets within a year. That actual spending has come through the legislature, though. She's pushing the legislative body to take up the investment quickly in their session and add to it with comprehensive housing and homelessness plans. The 2023 legislative session begins next Tuesday, January 17th. West Lynn is welcoming its youngest mayor in history. 23-year-old Rory Bialostotsky was just appointed as West Lynn's interim mayor after former mayor Jules Walter resigned last month after being elected to serve District 37 in the Oregon House of Representatives. Bialostotsky named a few priorities for his interim term. He noted balancing the budget and dealing with two projects related to Interstate 205. He says finding funding to pay for a waterline replacement project on the highway as mandated by the Oregon Department of Transportation is a major priority. Bialostotsky also brought up the issue of I-205 tolling diversion traffic and the impact that the city will see from that change. Bialostotsky grew up in West Lynn's Willamette neighborhood and graduated from West Lynn High School in 2018. He went on to intern at the National District Attorneys Association in Washington, D.C., before returning to work at a Portland-area law firm. Bialostotsky was just 21 years old when he was elected to Lynn City Council in 2020. He went on to be selected as council president by a unanimous consent from his fellow council members. The city of West Lynn will hold a special mayoral election on Tuesday, May 16th, in order to fill that seat for the long term. There aren't enough in-home caregivers to serve the growing number of people in need in Washington state. An item in this legislative session's budget would raise wages for workers and potentially attract more people to the profession. Eric Tegedoff has more.
There's a shortage of in-home caregivers in Washington state, but a union representing these workers, state lawmakers will be able to change that this session. SEIU 775, which represents individual in-home caregivers in the state, is asking lawmakers to fully fund the home rate for workers who have clients on Medicaid. That would bring their starting wages to more than $21 per hour. Gwen Goodfellow is an individual provider at SEIU 775.
Fully funding that rate would make the wages competitive, and it would also allow for dependent care coverage, which we don't have right now.
Dependent health care coverage could help fill coverage gaps for an estimated 1,500 uninsured dependents of home care workers, according to SEIU 775. Governor Jay Inslee's budget included a full funding of the home care rate. Across the country, 94% of area agencies on aging have seen an increase in the number of adults requesting services, but have struggled to find the workforce to cover this demand, according to U.S. Aging. Goodfellow says an increase in wages and benefits could alleviate the issue of a lot of workers.
It not only will help current caregivers, it will bring new caregivers into the profession. And in turn, it will help those clients who are waiting for help by addressing our caregiver shortage.
Updated healthcare rate was determined by a state rate setting board last year. It will ultimately be part of the state budget. The legislative session begins today. For Washington News Service, I'm Eric Pegadoff.
The National Women's Soccer League issued fines, suspensions, and lifetime bans as part of corrective action for soccer clubs in the wake of an investigation into widespread misconduct and abuse across the league. The Portland Thorns are no exception. They face a $1 million fine, the money that outgoing owner Merritt Paulson had pledged to donate to create a player safety office will be applied to the fine. Lifetime bans were applied to individuals, including former Portland Thorns head coach Paul Riley. Former Thorns executives Gavin Wilkinson and Mike Golub, who were investigated as part of a scheme to obscure sexual misconduct, were not mentioned. Six other clubs were also fined by the league, including the Chicago Red Stars, Racing Louisville, North Carolina Courage, Ole Reign, and Gotham FC. The Portland Thorns have also appointed their next head coach, assistant coach Norris. Norris joined the soccer club ahead of the 2022 season and helped the Thorns win their third league championship. Norris said in a statement, quote, "I would like to thank the organization for trusting me to lead this team into the next chapter. I know it will take hard work and a commitment from all involved to grow and get better as we aim for continued success. It is a great privilege to have inherited a team that is hungry, driven, and talented, and I am excited to give everything to the players, the club, and the Portland community as the head coach of the Portland Thorns," end quote. The 118th Congress narrowly passes the rules patch, and the DOJ has launched a review into classified documents found at Biden's post-VP office. With stories and more, it's Alex Gonzalez with 2023 Talks.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
The rules package is nothing controversial. In fact, there's only one change in the rules package, and that relates to the motion to vacate.
On Monday, House Majority Whip member felt confident that the 118th Congress would pass the rules package, which it did, but narrowly. Some view it as House Speaker Kevin McCarthy's first test in vacating the role. Emmer said the only major change he expected to be reinstated would be the motion to vacate the chair, which permits House members to try and oust the sitting speaker. Others like Democratic Representative Barbara Lee of California were not pleased to see pieces of legislation included in the package that surrounded key issues for Republicans like immigration, taxes, and abortion.
This rules package is meant to help this body govern, not restrict the personal autonomy of millions.
One of the bills would prohibit taxpayer dollars going towards abortions, despite federally funded abortions already being illegal. President Biden was in Mexico City on Monday. Ahead of this week's summit of North American leaders, Mexican President Andrés Manuel López Obrador said he would consider taking in more migrants than previously stated, following the new migration directives President Biden outlined last week. The Department of Justice has launched a review into classified documents found at the Biden Penn Center in downtown Washington, D.C., which Biden started after serving as vice president. The White House confirmed it is working with the DOJ and handed the documents over to the National Archives and Records Administration. Republican Senator Ben Sasse, an outspoken critic of former President Donald Trump, has resigned as he takes on a new role as president of the University of Florida.
Let there be debates across the continuum from far left to center right to far right. Debate policy with vigor.
Sasse's departure now means Nebraska Republican Governor Jim Pollen will appoint someone to the vacancy. Today, the Supreme Court is set to hear a case as labor unions across the country concerned as some feel the conservative majority on the high court could undermine the appeal for workers to strike as well as remove authority the National Labor Relations Board holds. Finally, former Brazilian President Jair Bolsonaro was admitted to an Orlando hospital on Monday for abdominal pain. Bolsonaro has had abdominal issues before following a 2018 campaign event in which he was stabbed. This comes as Biden faces mounting pressure to extradite the former Brazilian president a day after far-right supporters stormed the Brazilian capital, alleging election fraud in the recent presidential election. I'm Alex Gonzalez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
Hey, how are you?
The White House will put forward a proposal that would lower student loan debt payments for millions of Americans. Education experts see it as a powerful tool to make college affordable, particularly for those with lower incomes. President Joe Biden actually announced a new repayment plan back in August, but it was overshadowed by his sweeping plan to lower or eliminate student debt for millions of Americans. Education Secretary Miguel Cardona said, quote, "Student debt has become a dream killer. This is a promise to the American people that, at long last, we will fix a broken system and make student loans affordable," end quote. The president is moving forward with the repayment plan, even though conservative opponents put forward two legal challenges to his one-time debt cancellation. It faces an uncertain fate before the Supreme Court. The Education Department formally proposed a new repayment plan today, publishing it in the Federal Register and starting a public comment period. If finalized, the proposal would have lower monthly payments, an easier path to forgiveness, and a component that unpaid interest will not be added to a borrower's loan balance. The federal government currently offers four types of income-driven plans, but the proposal would mostly phase out three of them while focusing on one simplified option. As long as borrowers meet their monthly payments, unpaid interest would not be charged. Adding interest to a loan balance can cause a major rise in debt, even if borrowers make payments. The proposal also makes it easier to get debt erased after several years of payments are made. Existing plans promise to cancel any remaining debt after 20 or 25 years of payments. The new plan would erase all remaining debt after 10 years for those who took out $12,000 or less in loans. Typical graduates of a four-year university are predicted to save about $2,000 a year compared with today's plans. 85% of community college borrowers should be debt-free within 10 years. Opponents on the right have blasted the revamped plan as an unfair handout with a steep price tag. The Biden administration estimates the repayment plan would cost nearly $138 billion over the decade, but some critics have put that year closer to $200 billion. Even some on the left have said the proposal is so generous that it effectively turns student loans into grants that don't need to be repaid. That could lead colleges to raise tuition prices if they know students won't be responsible for payment. You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for KBOO News In Depth. At 7, it's For the Wild. At 8, stick around for the Reggae Bobcast. Tonight's weather will be mostly cloudy with a low of 40 degrees. Tomorrow's weather has a higher chance of rain showers and a time high of 50 degrees. Today in history, in 1980, the New England Journal of Medicine publishes a letter called "Addiction Rare in Patients Treated with Narcotics." The letter is later used to downplay the general risk of addiction to opioids. The quote of the day is from American rock singer Pat Benatar, who was born today in 1953. She said, quote, "I've enjoyed every age I've been, and each had its own individual merit. Every laugh line, every scar is a badge I wear to show I've been present, the inner rings of my personal tree trunk that I display proudly for all to see. Nowadays, I don't want a perfect face and body. I want to wear the life I've lived," end quote. Earlier this year, when a typhoon slammed Alaska's west coast, FEMA officials didn't provide adequate translations for two Alaska native languages. For indigenous language speakers in the state, it caused confusion and frustration. Antonio Gonzalez has more with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia. National Native. When a powerful damaged homes, but when a power assistance resource home in Alaska in September, the Federal Emergency Management Agency decided to emergency information about assistance emergency into two indigenous languages spoken in two gen. But as Emily spoke reports, those translations is spoke useless to allow translation people.
Gary Tuolumne spent 20 years documenting Alaskan languages at the University of Alaska, Alaska Fairbanks Alaska Native Language Center. Thanks Alaska, but FEMA thought were translations have nothing to do with disaster recovery.
That is an amazing cover statement. The only thing you might gather from that is that you a couple of dates, but from that is that they are four. The only useful bit of information in there might be there's in their reference to a website or something. In there.
FEMA paid a California-based translations. FEMA has come California accent on language. FEMA nearly third accent on dollars to translate a third accent to translate I for disaster assisted to translate both the Sizas Yupik dialect and the Sizas dialect and documents that were supposed to be translated were act that were supposed to mishmash of phrases and lines, mishmash of directly out of a more 80-year-old book of indigenous folklore and language, book of Far East Russian. Tara Sweeney served as the assistant secretary Sweeney certain affairs under the Trump administration. Under the Trump, father created the Inupiaq alphabet.
A problem for
created
underrepresented minority communities. If this is the type of minority communities and disseminate type of minority and disseminate type of understand it, services to American citizens are being denied, especially in time of need. That is egregious.
These documents are supposed to offer information on how to apply for financial assistance to people whose homes were damaged. To people who lost subsist were fishing and hunting equipment, as well as the foods they'd been storing for winter. Sweeney says the documents are insulting.
There's a lot of that historical trauma of being in schools. They were speaking, you know, they're speaking this language, which is why there's a portion of us wide in Alaska that struggle with fluency.
Discovered the mistake. FEMA discovered the mistranslated document from its website. Documents also hired a base company to hire to work. To date, FEMA has paid an average $2,000 to people whose applications in disaster relief were approved. To put that into perspective, agency paid the original translation service, California-based accent on languages, based three times that amount. In Bethel, I'm Emily Schwing.
The remains of a Yakima who went missing nearly 40 years ago identified nearly King 5 News who went reports. King 5 News 29 when she went missing in the late 1980s. Her remains were found in 2008 near White Swan, Washington. A private DNA laboratory recently used advanced testing to identify the remains. The testing to identify says her death remains undetermined. Lakota Act Tournament Brings Plenty is among Lakota Act for the 80th Annual Golden Globes, taking place in Los Angeles Tuesday night. Brings Plenty is wellness Tuesday self taking role in the television series Yellowstone. The awards recognize excellence in film and television. The ceremony airs live on television, NBC, and streaming airs live on Peacock. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Major pharmacy chains CVS and Walgreens say they plan to sell the abortion medication Mifepristone after the Food and Drug Administration announced it's allowing pills to be bought over the counter with a prescription. Advocates are applauding the move, but say over the counter birth control access would help more women take control of their reproductive health. The agency is expected to make decisions on two proposed OTC birth control pills this year. Nadia Romlagan has more on the story in Kentucky.
CVS and Walgreens say they'll sell abortion medication at pharmacies after the FDA announced it's allowing mifepristone to be bought over-the-counter without a prescription. Advocates are applauding the move, but say over-the-counter birth control access would help more women take control of their reproductive health. Victoria Nichols with Free the Pill says women often have to take time off of work or school or find transportation or childcare to get into a doctor's office to get a prescription.
Bringing a birth control pill over-the-counter would really address some of the unnecessary hoops folks have to jump through to get to a clinic visit, to get a provider, to give them a prescription.
Research from KFF finds that overall contraceptive care is currently falling short nationwide when it comes to access, cost, and patients' needs and preferences. Nichols adds the FDA is currently considering proposals for over-the-counter or OTC birth control pills.
Right now, we know of two companies that are pursuing an RX to OTC switch. One is focused on a progestin-only pill, and the other is focused on a combined oral contraceptive.
Last fall, Kentucky voters rejected anti-abortion ballot measure Amendment 2. Lexington resident and volunteer for Showing Up for Racial Justice, Joseph Hammer, says he talked with Kentuckians from across the political aisle about the right to an abortion and recounts the story of speaking at length on the phone with one pro-life resident.
I say, so can you commit to voting no on constitutional amendment in November? And he said he would vote no. And so this is a self-identified conservative pro-life guy voting no. And that's why this amendment was defeated.
Volunteers headquartered in Jefferson and Boyd counties made more than 100,000 calls to Kentuckians and held more than 20,000 conversations with voters. This is Nadia Romlagan for Kentucky News Connection.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky traveled to the U.S. to secure more weapons and support. There's the small problem, though, that American support for the war spending in Ukraine is waning. Where does the conflict ultimately end? Greater intervention or a ceasefire agreement? Now we go to global citizen commentary on the issue with Portland State Professor Emeritus Mel Gertov. The opinions expressed in the following piece are those of the speaker.
Hello, everyone. Ukraine's President Zelensky had a fairly successful visit to Washington last month, returning home with promises of more American weapons and unqualified U.S. backing for Ukraine's war effort. Zelensky's sales pitch that the war is an investment rather than a charity went over very well in Congress. But questions remain, such as how long that investment will continue and when, if ever, will the war move into a negotiating phase. Zelensky, no doubt, is attuned to two slow-moving trends in American opinion that his country will have to confront sooner or later. One on the far right, which wants to substantially reduce aid to Ukraine, and on the left, which demands negotiations with Russia. Both those paths seem closed for the foreseeable future. Zelensky's own hopes, which may or may not have been a subject of discussion with President Biden, is for future protection from Russia, which includes Ukraine membership in NATO. He said several months ago, quote, de facto, we have already made our way to NATO. We have already proven our compatibility with alliance standards. He also said, quote, this is an alliance, de facto. Today, Ukraine is applying to make it de jure. But he backed down later, acknowledging that his country needed to accept that it might never join NATO. And with good reason. The very idea of Ukraine in NATO faces some unpleasant realities. For one, Ukraine does not have French, German, U.S., and probably other members' support for membership. Two, and probably most important, the NATO treaty would require that all members contribute to driving Russia out of Ukraine, a full-scale U.S. and European intervention that would mean war with Russia. Even though Ukraine cannot join NATO, it makes a plausible argument that it is performing NATO's mission, defeating Russian aggression. But that is an argument for prolonged war and no negotiations with Russia. In Europe, opinion polls show that only a slight erosion of public support for arming Ukraine so far. A new survey by EU Opinions, a platform for Europe public opinion, found that 57% of Europeans, down from 60% in the summer and 64% in March, still support sending arms to Ukraine. Few Europeans seem to buy Putin's argument. Even the new Italian right-wing leadership firmly supports Ukraine. Yet one can detect a slow erosion of support. And the longer the war goes on, the more will that erosion continue. Meanwhile, support in the United Nations for negotiating peace is far from firm. To be sure, in October, 66 UN members voted in favor of a ceasefire and immediate talks between Ukraine and Russia. However, no country offered a plan for implementing a ceasefire. The UN Secretary General himself discounted as a prospect. Nor was any opinion offered about how to induce either Kyiv or Moscow to accept a ceasefire, what its ground rules might be, for how long it would be in effect, and on what basis it might lead to negotiations. A recent op-ed in the Washington Post gives insight to the mindset of foreign policy elite in the United States. Former Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice and former Defense Secretary Robert Gates propose, quote, that the way to avoid confrontation with Russia in the future is to help Ukraine push back the invader now. Arguing that Putin's ambitions for restoring the Russian Empire will never be thwarted by negotiating peace, Rice and Gates call for more, dramatically more, weapons shipments to Ukraine. Ukraine, they acknowledge, is America's and NATO's proxy for defending the West. Yet they also acknowledge the terrible destruction war has wreaked on Ukraine, making it totally dependent on outside aid. Their solution is frankly unconscionable. Let Ukraine's people suffer even more so that the country can defeat Russia and reclaim all its territory. Morally and logically, that is no solution at all. Supporters of a negotiated peace in Ukraine need to do a much better job of promoting the idea. It is not enough to keep calling for peace when one of the warring parties is an aggressor state. What would the parameters be for negotiations? How would a ceasefire preliminary to talks be supervised? And what are the substantive issues to negotiate, given that neither the Russians nor the Ukrainians are willing to yield territory or accept arms control? These are among the reasons I keep reminding people, unhappily, that not all wars end in peace settlements. Some wars are interminable and only end when one party is exhausted or, hopefully for Russia, changes course when the regime changes. That's not a near-term solution, but peace through war is worse still. Thanks for listening. I'm Mel Gertoff for The Global Citizen.
Almost half of American adults without college degrees think they need additional education to advance their career, and 53% say they're likely to enroll in courses or training within the next 5 years. As Nadia Ramlagan reports, in North Carolina, higher education institutions say they're seeing an uptick in interest in returning to school from working adults.
Recession forecasts and lives upended by the pandemic have prompted many working adults in North Carolina to consider going back to college. A 2022 survey by Gallup and Strata Education Network found almost half of American adults without college degrees think they need additional education to advance their careers. And 53% say they'll likely enroll in courses within the next 5 years. Continuing education expert at Wake Technical Community College, Monica Gemperlane, explains people are seeking flexible and fulfilling work.
And that does sometimes require new job training or upskilling, seeing ways that they can maybe find a career path that aligns with their interests is an important factor for them, and then having flexibility in terms of their work schedules.
There remains a stark gap between the perceived need for higher education in less populated areas compared with cities. More than half of urban residents say they need more credentials, compared with less than 40% of rural residents. Assistant Director of Admissions at William Peace University, Ben Levine, says working adults considering going back to school should reach out to admissions offices and have an open conversation about their career goals, skills, and schedule.
But that's definitely the first to do. Is to speak to a college or even more than one and find out what they're about, find out what resources they have.
Gemperlane adds options are available for people uncertain about their new career path. She points to the benefits of short-term training programs or non-degree study as a way to explore new fields or get a foot in the door.
We do have a program that they're unemployed or underemployed or possibly seeing a layoff on the horizon, that they could come to us for some C-Wave skills analysis or job training or help with employment. So that's a special unique program here in North Carolina, which folks often don't know about.
A full-time worker with a high school diploma will earn around $1.6 million within their lifetime, while those with an associate's degree earn $2 million, according to data from the Georgetown University Center on Education and the Workforce. This is Nadia Ramlagan for North Carolina News Service.
The drive towards consumerism is linked to death anxiety, according to researchers. With the new years upon us, people can focus their resolutions for 2023 on values that are more rewarding. Tegadoff speaks with two psychology professors to learn more.
The beginning of a new year is a time for resolutions, offering people a chance to assess their own values and priorities. might wish to cut down on how much they buy. And researchers say the drive toward consumerism is closely linked to death anxiety. Dr. Jim Kasser is an emeritus professor of psychology in Knox College who researches terror management theory, which is based on research from the denial of death author Ernest Becker. Kasser and another researcher decided to test anxiety about death and consumerism, which is core to American culture.
Terror management theory and Ernest Becker would probably predict that when people were reminded of their own death, they would become more greedy and more desirous of making a lot of money and having a lot of possessions.
Kasser says this central theory has proved true in research. People who are anxious about their death try to bolster their self-esteem, often by investing deeper into the dominant cultural worldview. However, Kasser says people can push back on society's materialistic impulses, including through their New Year's resolutions. He says critiquing advertisements can help, as well as a focus on personal growth and social goals.
Those would be the kinds of resolutions which the research shows should promote intrinsic values and should decrease one's focus on materialistic values.
Brian Burke is a psychology professor at Fort Lewis College who also studies terror management theory. He says while death anxiety can make people double down on materialism, knowing about these unconscious choices and why we make them can help us supersede them.
We can override the fact that consumerism has been into our culture and that we don't have to pick materialistic values. We don't have to choose that we want to get richer in 2023. We can choose to be kinder, to do other things that are much more in line with our more deeply held values.
The Ernest Becker Foundation, which researches topics such as consumerism and death anxiety, is based in Seattle. For Washington News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News.